Saturday, July 29th, 2406. International Police Station, Babylon 6, Bahava L System, Centaurus Sector. League night at the Zoka Bowl, and the rafters resounded to the thunder of polycarbonate on polished wood and the shouts of Babylon 6's most enthusiastic bowlers. All the alley's 20 lanes were in use, most of them crewed by teams of cheerful men and women in matching loud shirts, apart from the one all the way at the end, number 21, there being, by long tradition, no lane 13, which played host to three men in much more subdued casual wear. They seemed a little out of place amid the boisterous, brightly colored throng, but nobody gave their presence much thought. The station's commander was often to be seen entertaining guests at 21, which was sort of by way of being his private lane. Captain Derek Bacon often treated bowling as something of a diplomatic or cultural function, entertaining visiting dignitaries. Sometimes this worked out. Centauri Emperor Turhan, for instance, had enjoyed his visit to the Zoka Bowl very much. Sometimes the results were more mixed, as for instance when the Klingon and Romulan ambassadors had come to blows over a scoring dispute. Tonight there was little enough chance of that, because his guests were his own chief of security, Michael Garibaldi, and the chief of the IPO himself, who was unlikely to accuse either one of cheating and/or offer to do pugilism with them. Just at the moment, they were between games, totting up their scores and performing routine maintenance. "So I say to Miranda, 'I hate it that you're good at bowling, too,' Garibaldi was saying, and she just smirks at me and says, 'I'm good at everything, Michael. I thought you'd have noticed that by now.'" Griffin laughed. "Yeah, that sounds like Miranda," he said. He might have gone on, but just then they were joined by a slim, black-haired woman dressed in combat pants and a dark hoodie, and he had to pause in what he was doing to just stand there for a moment and stare at her. This was not because she was particularly gorgeous. He did find her very attractive, but it was a quirky sort of attractiveness, the kind that grows with familiarity and doesn't arrest at first sight. Her mouth was a little too wide, her blue-violet eyes slightly too big, and her rather large, aquiline nose might have been described as a beak by someone unkindly disposed toward it, or called hawk-like by someone attempting to be a bit more poetic. There was a liveliness about her expression, though, that made up for all that. Made it all work, in fact, in a way that a more ordinary face wouldn't have. None of that was why Griffin had to stare at her, though. He had to stare at her because, A, he knew her, and B, the last he had been aware, she was officially dead. She stood at the step leading down to the lane, regarding him with a knowing little smirk. The other two noticed his startled expression, turned, and looked at the woman, one in confusion, the other with growing delight. "Chief, something wrong?" Garibaldi asked. The woman's smirk grew a little bit as she answered for him, "No problems. He's just seen a ghost, is all." Griffin blinked, shaking himself out of his reverie. But before he could speak, Derek had beaten him to it, throwing his arms wide and booming, "Jin!" in a voice that momentarily stopped the chatter all the way over to lane 15. The woman grinned broadly and spread her arms to match. "Derek," she replied. "John boy," said Derek. "Chief," the woman in black replied, and then she, Derek, and Griffin all pitched their voices in a faux gravelly register and declared, "McLeod." "Okay, I'm completely lost now," said Garibaldi. But he had to wait until she'd finished hugging both of the other men in turn before he got anything like an explanation. With an arm still thrown over the chief's shoulders, she turned her grin to him and said, "Hi, sorry to barge into your game like this." She put out her free hand. "Virginia Shepherd. I used to be with the WDF back in the day." Still looking faintly bemused, Garibaldi shook the offered hand. "Michael Garibaldi," he said. "Pleasure to meet you," she said, then unlooped her other arm from around Griffin's neck and said, "So, you guys have room for a fourth?" "Sure, why not?" Garibaldi said. "You guys will go easy on me, right?" said Shepard, picking up one of the Zokobol's house balls from the return rack. "I haven't bowled 10-pin in a long time. Valhalla's nice, but it's all that candlepin crap up there." 10 frames and 600 credits later, Garibaldi returned his shoes to his bag with a rueful smile and a shake of the head. "Go easy on the new kid," he said. "I can't believe I fell for that." "I'll give you a chance to win it back someday, Mr. Garibaldi. Have no fear," said Shepard cheerfully, as she tied her all-black all-stars. Then, turning to Griffin, she went on, "Got a minute, Griff? Let's go for a walk." Griffin nodded. "Sure," he said. "I'll see you guys later." They said their farewells with another hug for Derek. Then Shepard returned her rented shoes and they left the Zocalo. They headed down to B-6's O'Neill Cylinder habitat area, familiarly known as the Garden, not saying much until they were out in the open, grassy space under the piped-in Bajoran sunshine. "So," said Griffin, "been a few years. Last I knew, you were a Valkyrie." "Still am, at least officially," Shepard replied. "I'm on, I forget what Hildy called it in the paperwork, an extended, self-directed Midgard detachment or some such nonsense." She smiled. "At large and looking for trouble, basically." Griffin chuckled. "Just like old times," he said. "So what can I do for you?" "Well, actually, I came to see if there's anything I can do for you," Shepard told him. "I mean, this thing with the Earth Alliance, repercussions in the Federation, you must need all the operators you can get." She flicked a fingertip against the N7 badge screened on the front of her hoodie. "I don't like to brag, but they tell me I'm pretty good at some things," she added with a smile. Nodding, he considered that for a few moments, his face thoughtful. "Actually," he said at length, "there is something you might just be perfect for." Shepard looked intrigued. "Lay it on me," she said. "Are you by yourself?" he asked. "Nah, Caden cashed his return ticket and came back with me." She shrugged. "He's around here somewhere. Said something about giving me room for this part." Rolling her eyes slightly, she added, "You know how he gets sometimes." "Well, I could use his help with this thing, too, if he's up for it." "It's what we came for," said Shepard easily. "We're supposed to meet back up at the Zocalo later. I'll bring him to your office?" Griffin shook his head. "Not the office," he said. "I want to try and keep it quiet. I doubt anyone knows you're back, or would understand the significance of it if they knew. But for now, we need to avoid any official contact. We've still got Starfleet people on the station, and I suspect a few of them are reporting to Earth, knowingly or not." "Ooh, cloak and dagger stuff," Shepard said with a grin. "Works for me. We don't get a lot of that in Valhalla. Where do you want to meet?" "I have a message from another time. Airy Productions Unlimited and Imagination Unlimited present Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Shepard's 11. Act 1, Collection Agency, by Benjamin D. Hutchins, hi, that's me, with Philip Jeremy Moyer and Jeff Depew. Celestial Pizza, Port Gerardar, Gerardo. Over a pepperoni pizza the size of a manhole cover, Griffin explained his need. "For the last 10 months, the Babylon Foundation has been tracking a pattern of anomalies in the Earth Alliance," he said, then went on without further preamble. "We think the EA is losing its outermost colonies." Caden Alenko raised an eyebrow. "Define losing," he said. "Hard to say for sure," Griffin said. "Unfortunately, relations between us and the Dome haven't been the best for the last couple of years. So what we've been getting on the problem has been extremely sketchy. Back channels, unauthorized contacts from sources within various EA agencies that were still at least vaguely friendly, long-range sensor data. He shook his head. It's a mess, and it's left us with a fragmented picture at best, but what we can make out in that picture isn't good. The pattern always seems to be the same. A first-stage EA colony out on the coreward fringe of the Federation, usually in the Attican Traverse, suddenly drops out of comm contact. Sometimes there are a few garbled transmissions that may or may not be distress signals, but after that, nothing. They go completely dark. Automatic systems keep working, navigational beacons, that kind of thing. But that's it. What's Earthdome doing about it? Shepard wanted to know. Griffin shrugged. Even before they cut off relations with us altogether last week, they'd been stonewalling us for months. The IPO's only EA office has been on Earth itself since 2404. We had no presence out in the Traverse before this business ever started. We did get one report from a black source within Earthforce that they found at least one of the affected colonies completely deserted. As if everyone just got up and left, was the phrase she used. Sounds like the Greys, said Alenko. Abducting whole colonies? Said Shepard skeptically. Come on, Caden. The Greys had a hard time with the logistics of bagging everybody at a minor league baseball game. And it was free bat night. She smirked nostalgically. They're never going to make that mistake again. Whoever it is, Griffin said, all our intel indicates that Earthforce isn't making much progress identifying or stopping them. And now that the Dome's cut off all contact with Zeta Cygni, they're going it completely alone. He shook his head. Not acceptable. Whatever my differences with the Earth Alliance's government, those people need help. Help they're not getting from the Dome. So, since the last time this happened, I've thought of a plan. Is it a cunning plan? Shepard asked with a faint, knowing smile. Remains to be seen, Griffin admitted wryly. Now that Intel Division and the Babylon Foundation's info-trackers know what to look for, we should know where and when almost immediately the next time it happens. I need a quick response force, ready to go immediately. Someone whose eyes and judgment I can trust, on the site as soon as possible after the incident, to hopefully get a line on what the hell is going on over there. Obviously, though, the situation's very delicate. I can't send people who are officially identifiable as IPO or even IPO-allied personnel. If I did, and they were ID'd at this point, the shitstorm would probably dwarf even last week's excitement. Which is where we come in, Caden said. Exactly, Griffin confirmed. You're not and never have been part of the IPO. Hell, you're both officially dead. So even if someone gets an ID on you off a security scan or something, the report probably won't be believed. Well, I'm game, said Shepard, downing the last of her Pepsi. How do we play it? I'll get you quarters on B6, discreetly, down in the Red Sector civilian res blocks. Have your gear together and be ready to roll at very short notice. Your transportation will be all lined up. When we get the signal from Intel or the Foundation that it's happened again, you'll jump on it. If we do it right, you can get in and out before the Dome's own response arrives. Might get a little dull in the meantime, Caden remarked. It might, Griffin admitted, but I don't think you'll have long to wait. We think the average downtime between incidents is around 3 weeks. It's been 4. Monday, July 31st, 2406. Red 1440. Babylon 6. Shepard was lying on her bunk watching TV when the signal came. With the well-ordered precision of a seasoned professional, she was up and shod within 20 seconds. Her gear was already packed and ready to go. She had only to switch off the holoset, swing her deceptively heavy duffel bag onto her shoulder, and hit the corridor. As she locked the room behind her, she saw Caden emerging from Red 1442 next door, dressed in similarly plain street clothes and carrying a similar bag. A little smile played at her lips as they fell into step and headed for the elevator. "Beat you by at least a second," she teased. "No excuse, Commander," he replied mock stolidly. In the lift, Shepard stood lookout while Caden used a combat engineer's tech tool to convince the control panel that they were emergency traffic requiring an express priority run to the Red Sector docking level. Precisely 1 minute and 22 seconds later, they emerged onto the concourse to find it deserted and Bay D-24 cordoned off with closed-for-maintenance holotape. The alarm didn't sound as they breezed through the tape and into the bay. Griffin was waiting for them, looking faintly pleased at the spy movie measures he'd had to use to make certain no one saw him seeing them off. The bay was one of the larger commercial ones, intended for a bulk freighter, and so it was rather comically underused at the moment. The only vessel parked in it, to which he led them, was a boxy craft that seemed to have been a Danube-class runabout in a previous life, until someone had stripped it of any unnecessary hull protrusions and thermocoated it black. "The Psi-Corps left it on Titan last week," Griffin explained as he keyed the hatch. "My engineering team's been through it from one end to the other to make sure there are no dirty tricks aboard, and since there aren't, we might as well put it to use. It's got a unique stealth system." He glanced at Shepard and smiled darkly. "And by unique stealth system, I mean they seem to have dug up the old IES patents." Shepard chuckled. "Just like old times, only smaller," she quipped, putting her bag on the deck next to the table in the oversized shuttle's tiny wardroom. "I hope they've upgraded the engines, too," Caden remarked. He put his bag down next to Shepard's and then went forward to the cockpit. "I'm afraid not, so you'll be getting a ride to the scene with a friend of mine," Griffin said. Shepard took left seat, Caden right, and they started pre-flighting the runabout as the chief stood behind the center console and went on briefing them. "Once you're in the system, your ride will drop you off and then loiter in orbit in case you need backup. It's absolutely critical that they not be spotted, though. So if there's any chance of disclosure, you're going to be on your own. Use your discretion, but try to stay out of trouble." "Behind enemy lines in a ship with no guns, with backup who can't show themselves and an unknown alien threat," Shepard observed, then looked back over her shoulder at Griffin with a grin. "Give me a hard one next time. Remember, I'm not looking to confront whatever's doing this without knowing more about it," he told her. "Don't go haywire on whatever you find there. What you learn is no good to me if you get killed again before you can report it," he added with a wry grin. "Aye, aye, sir," Shepard replied with a sketchy salute. His smile only a little grim from the tension of their situation, Griffin leaned down, one hand on her shoulder, and handed her a data pad with the other. "All the comm protocols and whatnot you'll need are here," he said. "Good luck, Jen." Rendezvousing with a cloaked starship while piloting a small craft outfitted for 99th percentile passive stealth was a non-trivial task in itself. But both Shepard and Olenko were expert spacers, and so, evidently, were the people running the ship they were sent to meet. With a minimum of hassle and without anyone in the busy Bahava L system the wiser, they found themselves parked in a small but well-appointed shuttle bay. Emerging from the runabout, they found themselves met by a brace of what appeared to be Romulan Marines dressed in the uniforms of Gamelon Imperial Guardsmen, led by a short but well-built red-headed woman whose blue skin showed that she, at least, was wearing the right clothes. "Commander Shepard, Colonel Olenko," she said, shaking their hands in turn. "I'm Centurion Keterina Dragonar, 2nd Gamelon Guards. Call me Rina. Welcome aboard the Lorica. If you'll come with me to the bridge..." She paused, looking up reflexively as the hum of the ship changed pitch slightly. "We're already underway," she finished. "Why is a Gamelon Guards ship getting involved in an IPO operation?" Caden asked, as they made their way up the companionway from the shuttle bay to what Shepard assumed was a turbolift. Because this isn't an IPO operation, Rena replied with a little smile. Chief Griffin is a man who believes in using any asset that's available and suits the mission, and for this job we happen to be both, she went on, less flippantly as they boarded the lift. That doesn't really answer my question, Caden pointed out. The lift ride was a short one, and they were already emerging onto the bridge as he went on. I mean, this is definitely an irregular operation. I can just about see why he would ask, but not why you would agree to do it. I agreed, said a cool voice from the seat whose tall back was to the lift doors as they emerged, because a man whose integrity and ability I rate very highly asked me to. The voice's owner swiveled and rose from her seat, revealing herself to be a taller, slimmer Gamelon woman than their escort, black-haired and with a cybernetic cowl covering the socket of one eye. Besides, she went on, I believe in the mission of the International Police and the Babylon Foundation. Honor, integrity, justice. The common people of the Earth Alliance deserve to be treated with those qualities, even if their government has eschewed them. You're speechifying, Rena pointed out. The taller woman inclined her head with a private little smile. Forgive me, she said, an occupational hazard of the diplomatic service. She offered her hand to Shepard. Amanda Dessler, I lately find myself serving as my father's ambassador to Babylon, and sometimes I forget myself, she added. The Crown Princess of the Gamelon Empire is a secret agent for the IPO? Asked Shepard, shaking her hand. Wonders never cease. Says the woman who returned from the dead just for something to do, Amanda replied, smiling. As she led the ship's guests into a conference room abaft the bridge, she continued, I've heard a great deal about you, Commander, from a mutual friend of ours, Corwin Ravenhair. But time enough for socializing later. What has Griffin told you about your mission? Not much, Shepard admitted as she, Caden, and the two Gamelons seated themselves at the conference table. I know what we're trying to do, more or less, but this thing was laid on in such a hurry we don't even know where we're going. Well, that at least I can tell you, said Amanda. She touched a control, energizing the holojector built into the middle of the table. It projected the image of a planet surrounded by informative text. Our destination is an EA colony world in the Exodus sector, near the Federation's coreward boundary with the slightly fanciful name Eden Prime. Caden and Shepard glanced at each other. Deja vu all over again, said Caden. Come again? Said Rena, arching an eyebrow. We've been there before, Shepard explained. In 2280. Matter of fact, we met there, Alenko said. Back then, it was a United Earth colony, just starting out. I was part of the UEDF Corps of Engineers crew, helping to set up the colony's defense systems when the planet was invaded. Shepard's Wedge Defense Force Command, the Normandy, was the first friendly ship on the scene after we got part of a distress call out. I would have thought they'd be out of Stage 1 by now, Shepard added. I mean, the place got pretty beat up in that fight, but that was, what, 126 years ago? According to the Gazetteer file we have, said Amanda, this version was founded 4 years ago. The original may have been abandoned after the supply lines were disrupted during Earth's 24th century World War. She smiled a little wryly. Before my time and after yours. True enough, Shepard conceded. Anyway, probably not important right now. What do we know about the situation there? Square root of fuck all, basically, Rena admitted. Their sub-ether links went dark about half an hour ago. That and what the info chasers at the Foundation call other indications. They play that stuff pretty close to the vest. Regardless, we'll know soon enough, said Amanda. She pressed another key. Commander Jathan, report. On course at best speed, Your Highness, replied the voice of the ship's captain. ETA 3 hours, 46 minutes, mark. Very well, carry on, said Amanda. Shepherd glanced at her wristwatch, an antique Shcherbinsky. That'll put us there about 1800 GST. She got to her feet. Well, if we don't know what we're going to find there, we'd better be ready for anything. With a wry smile, she added, in the interest of which, I'm going to grab a nap. Eden Prime, Utopia System, Exodus Sector, Earth Alliance, Corward Territory. Caden put the runabout down in a likely spot a short way outside the settlement, evidently undetected. At the very least, they weren't challenged by anything or anyone. They left it parked behind a rocky outcropping that should shield it from prying eyes in town, assuming there were any, and then hit it in on foot. The local time felt like late afternoon or early evening, to judge from the slant and length of the shadows. No signs of battle, Caden mused as they moved carefully through the thin woods that fringed the colony. That's one difference from last time. I don't think we're in the same place, either. This terrain doesn't seem familiar. Shepherd shrugged. A lot can change in 125 years. I don't even hear any shooting from the town. Think we're too late? Not sure. Stay sharp. And suddenly, as though out of nowhere, the two were engulfed by a swarm of enormous insects of some type, bugs as big as hummingbirds, swirling and buzzing and hitting their kinetic barriers with audible, ripply thumps. Shepherd swatted reflexively at one that flew alarmingly close to her face, knocking it broken to the ground. Automatically, she cried, "Holy Jesus, what are these goddamn animals?" In spite of the situation, Alenko snorted with amusement. "What the hell are you yelling about?" he asked, smacking one away from his head. Then, as suddenly as they had come, the bugs dispersed, leaving their two or three slain comrades behind. Shepherd looked suspiciously around at the woods, then knelt down and picked up the one she'd killed, turning it over in her hand. "Never mind," she said. Rising, she stuffed the dead bug into a spare ammo compartment on her armor, then set out for town again, adding reflexively, "It's your turn to drive." The bug swarm returned twice more in the 4 or 5 minutes it took them to reach the colony, always to be stymied by their shields and give up. Joking aside, Shepherd mused after the third encounter, "What the hell are these things?" Caden shrugged. "I don't know, but they seem to be stumped by grade 4 barriers, which I suspect is a good thing." Shepherd took stock of their surroundings. Typical colony town outskirts, thermopacked dirt streets, rectangular prefab houses, and no sign of anyone. "Maybe we're too late," Caden said. "Lorica to Shepherd," came the voice of one of Amanda Dessler's officers, Lieutenant Rokar. Shepherd keyed her comm. "Go ahead, Lorica." "Be advised, our sensors are showing a huge energy signature not far from your location, in the vicinity of the settlement spaceport. Keep an eye out to your southwest. I doubt you'll be able to miss whatever's generating it." Shepherd turned in the recommended direction and looked. "All I see over there is the worst-looking skyscraper I've ever seen in my lives," she said. "Man, talk about a design student's nightmare. Who puts up a high-rise that ugly?" Alenko stepped up next to her and looked. The structure she was indicating was indeed hideous, a weird combination of a curvilinear alloy center section with what looked like rocky encrustations, as though someone had partially converted an enormous boulder, or perhaps a fairly small asteroid, into an office building from within. He was about to agree when something occurred to him, his eyes going wide behind his combat helmet's visor. "Shepherd, this is still a Stage 1 colony," he reminded her. "There shouldn't be anything here yet but prefabs." Shepherd looked more closely. The ugly building loomed over the low skyline of the spaceport complex, dwarfing the warehouses, hangars, and even the ATC tower. It was that last, so small by comparison that it had eluded her notice the first time, that suddenly jumped everything into scale for her. Suddenly her impression of the object reoriented itself, and she realized it was not a hideously avant-garde skyscraper. It was a starship of some kind, a weirdly melded combination of metal and rock, standing on its end like a 1930s movie serial rocket ship. It was just so huge, she had, at first, unconsciously dismissed the idea that it could be any such thing. If that ATC tower were the usual height, then the vessel had to be something like the size of a colonial battle star, standing on its tail amid the wreckage of what had been a spaceport, like an oversized model plunked roughly into the middle of a diorama. "Oh, shit," she said with feeling. "Brother, we are going to need a bigger boat." "Yep," Caden agreed. Then, still gazing at the gigantic ship, she held up a hand as though for quiet. "Hear that?" she asked. "No," Caden replied. Shepherd half closed her eyes, listening hard. "There it is again," she said. "Gunfire." With a slight smile, she added, "I guess somebody's fighting back out there after all. Come on." They ran through the deserted streets, taking shortcuts down alleys and across plazas, homing in on the sounds of battle. As she hurtled a low wall, Shepard took her rifle from its mag mount on her back, readying it for action. Caden was right behind her, powering up the cybernetic amplifiers that gave him access to his psionic potential, his sidearm in hand. They rounded a corner into what looked like it might have been the town's central square to find a lone humanoid figure dressed in Earth Force's standard combat armor, fighting a pitched battle against at least a dozen of... something. Vaguely man-shaped, but chitinous, with four glowing yellow eyes in a single horizontal row, they belonged to no species Shepard had ever seen before. "I don't recognize them," she said as she piled into cover behind a stack of storage containers. Caden peeked up above their makeshift barrier, then ducked down again with a curse. "Neither do I." "Well, we can worry about that later," Shepard said, taking another quick glance. She switched her rifle to incendiary mode. "Right now, work to do." Caden nodded. "Just give the word." "Just like last time," said Shepard nostalgically. "Okay. Go." On her order, Alenko sprang from cover, wound up, and launched a bolt of psychokinetic force across the plaza, sending one of the aliens flying. The others, evidently startled by this attack from a new direction, turned and opened fire with rifle-like weapons. Alenko dove behind a metal fab bench, alien bullets sparking from his barriers. While the aliens were distracted, Shepard vaulted the packing cases and opened up on them. The deep bark of her rifle made a sharp contrast to the high-pitched whittering of the aliens' weapons, or the fizzing pop of the Earth Force trooper's phased plasma gun. The Morgan Arms M98E Matic was not, technically speaking, an assault rifle. It had no fully automatic fire mode, instead relying on the close teaming of its raw ballistic power and its wielder's precision skill. The 23rd Century Wedge Defense Force had classified it as a marksman rifle. A miniature mass accelerator, it used energy from an expendable capacitor to hurl aerodynamic pellets of extremely dense alloy at quite preposterous velocities, one at a time, only as fast as the operator could pull the trigger. In Virginia Shepard's case, though, that was pretty damn fast. Faster, in fact, than some fully automatic weapons would cycle if left to their own devices. Shepard pumped a full charge of 16 rounds, each further enhanced by an incendiary jacket of superheated plasma, into the alien formation in more or less the time it took them to realize they had a third attacker. Four went down, their exoskeletons smashed by the Matic's comparatively massive, by modern standards, projectiles. Others, standing too near their least fortunate comrades, were set afire by the splashing plasma and recoiled in dismay, flailing at themselves. By the time she slung herself back into cover alongside the Earth Force trooper, she'd already swapped the spent capacitor for a fresh one. "You look like you could use a hand," she quipped, raising herself up to blast another of the aliens. "Where the hell did you guys come from?" the trooper, a woman, Shepard realized from her voice, blurted. "Oh, you know, just happened to be in the neighborhood," Shepard replied offhandedly. "Caden, still alive?" "So far," Caden replied from behind the bench. His cover was at right angles to theirs, so they had that corner of the plaza pretty well boxed, but with more insectoid aliens arriving from somewhere to the south, the situation was far from secure. "Good, good." Shepard turned to her newly acquired colleague. "What's your name, soldier?" To her great surprise, the reply she received was, "Alenko." Monday, March 15th, 2280. Eden Prime. "What's your name, soldier?" Shepard asked as Geth plasma fire raked the other side of the rock, behind which she and her newly acquired colleague had taken shelter. "Alenko," he replied, still slightly out of breath from his hell-for-leather sprint across the clearing. "Caden Alenko, Lieutenant, 189th UEDF Engineers." "Nice to meet you, Lieutenant Alenko. Commander Virginia Shepard, WDF Normandy. What's with the hostile robots?" This new Lieutenant Alenko went on to say that her first name was Arna, and that she was with the 12th Earth Force Lancers, not an engineering battalion. By the time she'd finished with that, Shepard had recovered from the surprise enough to quip, "Nice to meet you, Lieutenant Alenko. Name's Shepard. What's with the angry bug guys?" "I have no idea," Arna replied. "They came out of nowhere. At first we thought it might be the Zetans, but then these creatures disembarked and started killing anyone who could still move." Shepard gave her a quizzical look. "Why would Zeta Cygni attack this place?" A round from one of the alien's weapons sparked off the top of the wall by her head. Not flinching so much as giving the impact site a faintly annoyed glance, she added, "Actually, you know what? Hold that thought for right now." Then raised herself up and returned fire. The younger Alenko shook off her surprise in short order and got back with the program. The three humans, coordinating their fire and darting from cover to cover, started methodically clearing the aliens from their vicinity, consolidating their hold on the square. "The only bodies I see are combat troops," Shepard said as they regrouped near the center of the square, having momentarily run out of opposition. "Where's everyone else?" "Did you see the swarms of flying bug-like things on your way here?" Arna asked in reply. "They're cybernetic seeker drones of some kind. They have a paralytic sting. Anyone who wasn't wearing shielded armor went down in the first wave. Some of the aliens dragged them off, while the rest came after those of us who could still fight." She shook her head, fighting to maintain self-control. "We started over by the spaceport, near where their ship landed. I think I'm the only one left." Shepard nodded. "Rough day at the office," she said, her tone more sympathetic than her words suggested. Caden looked to the south side of the square. "And I think it's about to get even rougher," he said, pointing. "What the hell are those?" Shepard racked her mattock and drew another, much larger weapon from the mag mount alongside it. Already impressively large, this proceeded to unfold and telescope until it reached what struck Arna as a flatly unfeasible size for any armament not intended to be crew-served and or mounted on a light vehicle. It was plainly an anti-materiel weapon of some kind, but Shepard handled it as though it were nothing bigger or more elaborate than a sniper's rifle. "All right, George, let's see what we've got," she murmured, shouldering the weapon and peering into the telesight on top. After a second or two's consideration, her eye narrowed behind the eyepiece of her scope, her face taking on a vaguely puzzled, vaguely disgusted expression. Zombies? She mused. Robots? Robot zombies? She shook her head. We have got to get our new travel agent. Arna did the same with the much less powerful optic sight on her Oricon PPAR-4, and what she saw did not please her. There were alien reinforcements entering the far side of the square, but they weren't just the brown insectoids she'd been fighting so far. They were accompanied by other creatures which were superficially much more human-shaped, but wrong. Grayish-tinted and covered in what looked like glowing blue circuitry, they moved with strange, jerky motions. There was nothing wrong with their ground speed, though. Moving at a clumsy-looking but headlong run, they'd reached the defenders long before the more deliberately advancing insectoids. Or at least they would have if one of those defenders hadn't been psychokinetic and another armed with a phased plasma assault rifle. As the two Alenkos mowed down the charging zombie robot things on either side of her, Shepard focused intently on the alien leading the group that was moving up behind them. There was something strange about it. It had just paused as if struck by something and dropped its rifle. For a moment it tottered, its shoulders hunching forward. And then it levitated into the air. Limbs flung wide and seemed to burn from within, its chitinous hide cracking and blackening as its four eyes and all the cracks spreading across its body blazed with yellow-orange light. When it settled back onto its feet, it moved differently from the others, more upright, somehow, with a kind of casual arrogance. "Okay, that's new," Caden remarked, and then, to compound his and his colleague's surprise further, the burning alien spoke. Where the others had only made chittering sounds that were unintelligible to the humans, this one addressed them in standard with a deep, uncannily resonant voice, as though a much larger being were speaking through it from some imponderable distance. "Humans," it said, its voice dripping with contempt. "Your resistance is meaningless." "Says you, pal," Arna snapped. She rose to one knee, and fired a perfectly aimed burst. The plasma pulses popped and sizzled all across the creature's chest, blasting out chunks of blackened chitin. "Pathetic," the burning alien said. With a gesture of one clawed hand, it sent a bolt of some semi-visible energy hurtling toward her, blasting her clean out from behind cover. The armored trooper went down with a clash of plating on concrete, sliding halfway to the wall of the building behind them. "You will all," the creature went on, but before it could finish its taunt, its head had exploded with a thunderous sound. Half-stunned on the ground, Arna Olenko thought for a second that this had somehow happened spontaneously. A moment later, as her eyes came fully back into focus, she realized that the cooling fins on Virginia Shepard's preposterously long rifle, George, apparently, were glowing cherry red, and that Shepard herself was grinning nastily. "Oh, I'm sorry, were you talking?" she asked the dead alien, as its still-burning body sloughed away into a heap of smoldering embers. "Now we'll never know what we're all supposed to do," complained Caden. "Probably just as well," Shepard replied. She pumped the spent cap out of the weapon, then collapsed it back to its storage mode and swapped it for her matic again. While Caden laid down covering fire, she fell back toward Arna, firing from the hip to keep the alien's left flank's head down as she went. "You okay, kid?" she asked. "Think so," Arna replied. "Didn't know they could do that." "Yeah, well, I think we all missed that memo," said Shepard wryly. She fired another short volley into the alien's flank, then held out her free hand. "Come on your feet. This is getting too hot for the likes of us. We have to get out of here." Arna grabbed the offered hand and used it to haul herself to her feet. "What about the colonists? We can't just..." "You think the three of us are going to get them out of a starship the size of the Chrysler Building alone?" Shepard asked her. "I hate it too, but we're not going to help anybody by getting killed down here this afternoon. Now let's get the hell out of here. We need a plan." Arna looked like she might object further, but then her face took on a look of horror, and she shouted past Shepard, "Look out!" Shepard turned and saw Caden facing off against something. It looked like one of those robot zombie things, except bigger and weirdly misshapen, with a hideously distended, glowing blue hunchback so big it had actually forced the creature's head over past what ought to have been its right shoulder. From its left shoulder sprouted an enormous cannon-like appendage. Caden backpedaled away from it, emptying his sidearm into its center mass for no evident effect. "Son of a—" Shepard snarled, then launched herself toward it, gun blazing. Hermatic's heavier, faster slugs tore whole slabs out of its structure, spraying the ground around it with some greenish fluid. It turned its glowing, dead eyes to her, hissing. The Maddox cap ran dry, and she didn't have time to replace it, so she reversed the weapon instead and drove the shoulder stock into the monstrous creature's face. A half second later, she was on the other side of the square, hitting the wall of one of the outbuildings hard enough to smash the cinder blocks. She punched partly through and disappeared in a cloud of dust as the wall partly collapsed, burying her. "Shepard!" Caden cried. "I'll cover you. Fall back!" Arna called to him, blasting the nearest of the brown aliens. Rifle fire slashed around them as the two sought fresh cover, a task complicated by the still-standing robo-zombie's giant concussion cannon. Half-buried in broken concrete blocks, Shepard stirred, then reached slowly up and grasped the top of the lowermost intact block with one hand. After a moment's pause to gather her wits, she hauled herself upright, shedding rubble from the plates of her smashed and scraped armor. "Yeah, okay, ow," she thought. "Memo to self. You're not wearing your Valkyrie armor. You weren't allowed to bring it to Midgard. Ow." Her eyes flicked from one side of the battlefield to the other, assessing what had changed in the 5 or 6 seconds she'd been out. Half a dozen insectoids closing on Caden and Arna's position? Not an immediate problem. That giant zombie robot thing that had blasted her halfway to next week? Problem. It had just about backed the two humans into the corner of the plaza, in an angle of two heavier walls, and the cannon on its shoulder was starting to glow ominously again as Caden narrowed his eyes, building up for the kind of psychokinetic desperation play that would either solve the problem or give him a small cerebral hemorrhage, or possibly both. Scowling, Shepard reached to her back and drew her enormous sniper rifle again. Dropping its crosshair onto the creature's back, she yelled, "Hey, buddy!" Slightly to her surprise, it reacted, turning to face her. Its dead, blank face still held no expression, but the increasing glow of the cannon indicated that it had indeed noticed her. Before it could fire, George's voice roared out a second time, and the creature's misplaced head simply ceased to be. "Did you just see a real bright light?" she asked it. She wondered momentarily whether the head actually did anything on these creatures, but then it keeled over backward and lay still, the circuit traces covering its misshapen body going dark. The insectoids seemed to take that as a cue. Without evident consultation, they began to withdraw. Shepard stowed George, retrieved her mattock from where it had fetched up when she got blasted. Still in good working order, the old WDF armory made stuff to last. And joined the Alenkos in laying down some suppressive fire as the aliens beat their retreat. Moments later, the skyscraper-sized starship started to shift ominously, the subliminal beat of its idling engines suddenly picking up to a much more insistent tempo and volume. The space underneath its massive central thruster filled with orange light, and a palpable wave of heat washed over the deserted settlement. "Oh, that's not good," Caden said. Shepard pointed to a decorative pond 30 or so yards away. "Go! Move! Move!" she shouted, and the three humans sprinted toward it. Almost as one, they dove the last few yards in an all-out effort to reach the water before, with a sky-rending roar, the alien vessel lunged skyward atop a column of fire. Much of the pond either boiled or blew away in the hot, shrieking wind that followed, but the water did its job. Shepard and Caden emerged from the soup-warm shallows that remained, their armor dripping and steaming, parboiled but not seriously harmed. Arna, on the other hand, was unconscious, slumped limply in Caden's arms as he made certain her helmet was out of the water. "She'll be okay," he said after a cursory tricorder scan. "Just knocked out by the shockwave. She was a second or so behind us." Nodding, Shepard switched her comm to subvocal mode. There was no need for Arna to know about their backup vessel in orbit if she happened to wake up in the next few seconds, and called, "Lorica, this is Shepard. Look sharp, there's a very large alien spacecraft heading your way from this location. Capabilities unknown, recommend you do not engage. They have most of this colony's population on board. Try to get all the scans you can without giving yourselves away."
"Copy, Commander Shepard," Rokar replied. "We see them. By the gods!"
The Earth Alliance warship Menelaus had responded with all speed to the sudden silence of the colony at Eden Prime. They might not have been sharing information about the matter with outsiders even before the shutdown of relations with the IPO, but the Earth Alliance government was taking the situation in the Traverse very seriously, and had been monitoring matters in that region closely for months, waiting for just such an opportunity. In previous raids, the response forces had arrived too late to do anything but wander baffled through the ghost towns. Since receiving the assignment to patrol the outer reaches of the sector and remain alert for any anomalies, Captain Karen Holberg had been determined that next time would be different. Her determination was about to cost her. The Menelaus emerged from hyperspace as close to Eden Prime as her navigator dared, and her navigator was very good at his job. So good, they emerged a mere 200,000 miles from the planet's surface. They caught the alien ship before it had even cleared the upper atmosphere, and after issuing the requisite completely ignored challenge, opened fire. The Menelaus was a Nova-class battleship, one of the mightiest ships in the Earth Force Navy, designed to bring such legendarily capable vessels as the WDF's Iowa-class and the Seleucian Andromedas to heel if necessary. The alien ship was slightly bigger, but not by enough to imply that it would have any huge advantage. Aboard the Lorica, cloaked and secure nearby, Princess Dessler and her crew expected to see a prolonged slugfest. What they got instead was a few moments of shockingly sudden slaughter as, 4 or 5 seconds into the Earth Force vessel's barrage, the alien ship suddenly unleashed an enormous beam of coruscating yellow light from the giant round opening in its prow. To those watching from the Lorica, it resembled a hugely magnified Federation phaser beam in its sustained coherence and the way it issued from the emitter at an angle, an apparently steerable angle, as the beam proceeded to slash straight across the Menelaus's bow. The Earth Force ship's shields splintered, visible light bleed streaking the space where they had been. And, while the Lorica's crew watched in horror, the alien's beam weapon carved through the battleship's armor plating like butter, transfixing its hull lengthways like a kebab skewer through a sausage. Hideous and irresistible, the yellow beam raved through the superstructure of the Menelaus, vaporizing everything in its path, armor plating, internal decks and bulkheads, crewmen, engines. Seconds later, what remained of the ship cooked off in a titanic fusion fireball, and apart from a billion sparkling droplets of fast-cooling molten alloy, there was nothing to prove that she had ever been there at all. Amanda and her faithful Centurion exchanged a look. Nothing needed to be said. Both knew that the Lorica, doughty though she was, stood no chance at all against such a monster. They held their position, navigation systems primed in case the cloaking device somehow failed to hide them. Who knew what a ship like that could do? And an emergency withdrawal became necessary. But if the aliens noticed them, they didn't seem to care about them. Having disposed of the obvious opposition, the enormous vessel simply cruised away from the debris field, turned its prow toward distant stars, and vanished into hyperspace. After a few seconds' shocked silence, Amanda said quietly, "Rokar, report. Were you able to scan anything?"
Affirmative, Your Highness, Rokar reported. Hyperspace vectors, energy profiles, possibly some gross structural information. It'll take me a while to collate it all.
Commander, this is Ambassador Dessler, Amanda's voice said from Shepard's mastoid implant. The alien vessel is away. It destroyed an Earth Force battleship while making its escape. My sensor officer's scans will be transmitted to the IPO at Babylon 6 as soon as he has made them presentable.
She paused. What we just saw was sobering.
Destroyed a battleship? In that amount of time?
Can you render any assistance to the Earth Force crew without giving yourselves away? Shepard asked.
There's no one to assist, Amanda replied, sounding faintly shaken. The ship was completely obliterated. It took them seconds.
Having seen what I've just seen, I have to concur with the Chief's assessment. These creatures could threaten far more than just the Earth Alliance.
Then, seeming to pull herself together, she went on more briskly,
Will you be returning soon? My crew and I are eager to be gone from this place.
You'd better go without us, Shepard told her. We've got an Earth Force survivor. We'll have to figure out a way to handle her, but our cover's more flexible than yours. We'll just have to walk back.
Understood.
Good luck, Commander Shepard. I hope we'll have the chance to work together again someday.
Thank you, Your Highness. The feeling is mutual.
Shepard out. Switching off the comm, she turned to Caden, who stood looking expectantly at her.
Well, she said, looking down at her wrecked armor. That didn't go according to plan.
Then, regarding Caden and the unconscious Earth Force trooper, she sighed.
I suppose we can't just leave her here,